This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Okay, it's about 10 after time to get started. My pleasure to introduce our seminar speaker for today. Before we do that, last week when we were trying to introduce a seminar speaker, we had a moment of silence for Maurice Tauber. I guess we had more bad news this week, and maybe you've seen our website, and I sent an announcement around. We found out that Don McLean has passed away, and I realize many of you don't know, maybe you don't know Don or never interacted with him. He actually, I got here in university in 1988, and he had already left, so again, that was some time ago. But Don was a key player here in the department. He was a professor for many, many years. He worked with and was a pioneer in sort of plant-insect interactions, especially insects transmitting plant viruses. Diane Ullman was his student, so he had many other very prominent students. Don was chair of this department for a number of years. He was dean of the Division of Biological Sciences as well. And then he also went to the University of Vermont, where he was dean of the College of Biological Sciences there before he retired. So sad to see him pass, certainly. And the other individual, and Kathy prepared an article for the webpage, is Everett Schlinger has passed away. Everett was not really a graduate from this department, but he's associated with the University of California for many years. And got his degree from Berkeley, got his degree from Riverside. He was chair at Riverside, he was chair of the Department of Entomology at Berkeley. He was a diptyrist. He worked with Acroceres, which are the spider parasites, and he did a tremendous amount of work there. He also had a foundation, the Schlinger Foundation, and he and his wife Marion endowed the Everett and Marion Schlinger endowed chair in insect systematics, which we currently hold in the department, and we will be searching to fill that endowed chair coming up within the next year. So both those individuals, major players here, let's just have a moment of silence. Our seminar speaker today, Surendra Dara. You can see that he is the strawberry and vegetable crops advisor and an affiliated IPM advisor, basically working in San Luis Obispo, Santa Maria, Santa Barbara. He also is an affiliate in this department, and we're trying to sort of reestablish relationships, I guess, with many of the new county advisors that are in the field to kind of strengthen the application that we need in this department. So it's exciting to see him come and give this seminar. He has an amazing background. I don't know if I've tried to commit it to memory. I may need some help here just to go through it. Obviously, Surendra was born in India, has a Bachelor of Science degree in Agricultural Sciences there, a Master's of Science in Entomology from India. And for his PhD, he came to the States, basically went to Virginia Tech, and not really in Blacksburg, but he went to Blackstone, and he worked for Paul Centner. Paul Centner was the tobacco entomologist there. Blackstone is the tobacco capital of Virginia. He worked with entomopathogens for the control of green peach aphid. So he got his PhD sort of in that area. From there, he went to Africa in Benin, which is near Nigeria. He worked for about 4 years with the International Institute of Tropical Agriculture. And for those that know classical biological control, the green mite on cassava, is a classical case there. He worked with entomopathogens for control of that pest. So after 4 years there, he went to Canada, and he spent some time in Alberta, in Calgary, where he actually went back to school, and he received a master's degree in software programming. Okay, so after that experience, he went down to the University of Houston, where he spent a year as a postdoc working with fungal pathogens against harvester ants. Okay, from Houston, he ended up coming to California, and he worked at the Schaffner Research Station for the USDA, working on grapes and working on a biological control of glycine sharpshooter. He did that for a short period of time, and then he left the university and went to Certis, which is a biopesticide company. He spent a short period of time at Certis before finally taking his position as county advisor there in San Luis Obispo, Santa Maria, and Santa Barbara County. So in that context, an amazing background. He is a highly regarded entomopathogen specialist, in a sense, something that we desperately need in California agriculture, and I'll let him tell his story. So please.
Thank you very much, Mike, for the introduction, and thanks for inviting me to share my experiences with this group here. Based on the introduction, you can see the life of a typical immigrant. You cannot be in a stable position. You have to go where the opportunities are, and that is how I moved from continent to continent, and finally, I call this California home away from home. I want to share some of the work, the highlights of my work that I have been doing for the past 6 years. When we have these problems, all of us deal with certain agricultural problems, but depending on your position description and where you are located, the approach can be different. A faculty member on campus approaches it in a particular way, whereas a AES faculty addresses in a different way, and then people like me, farm advisors, might approach it in an entirely different way because we work with growers in the real, field situation, and we have to provide a practical solution there. If you ask the question why I have to have a title like that, but this is the reason. You can see it's a small cubicle. Most of the time it is crowded with all this material, and it is also very noisy. My neighbors are always talking, so I cannot focus on writing or anything. So I sometimes have to go outside into my car to make a call or to sit there. So that is one of the reasons for thinking outside the cubicle. But this is all I have. I am an insect pathologist, and I don't have a lab. So I have to improvise and look for opportunities and develop collaboration. So that is how I collaborate with Larry Godfrey, does some work at Shafter Research Station. And when we used to have USDA and UC facility there a few years ago, I developed a collaboration with the USDA and did some work there. Now I also collaborate with UCR and wherever there is an opportunity, Cal Poly and students. So I try to pull these resources to find solutions for my rural community.
Not Cal Poly.
To some extent, yeah. Cal Poly too, yeah. We did a small project there. And the Cal Poly students did some work for me in the field. I just want to show you the importance of these commodities I work. Strawberries, it's the largest producer in the world, and 88 to 90% of the strawberries produced in the U.S. come from California, ranked 6th and in California for the commodities. And if you look at the crop value itself, $2 billion, and if you include everything associated with the jobs and everything else, it is $3.4 billion. A couple of other commodities I work with, I'm not showing any data related to these, but these are other important commodities. As you can see, it is 1.6 billion for lettuce and 0.7 billion for broccoli. And if you look at the value of all the vegetables and strawberries in my two counties, it is $2.5 billion. And I am the only advisor. I am an entomologist, but my responsibility is the commodity based, a general responsibility took. So I have to work on irrigation and nutrient management, plant diseases and pests and everything that is that the growers need help with. Just wanted to show you how much of a pesticide, chemical pesticide and other pesticides are used. So this is a 2012 pesticide use report. If you look at this, most of it is chemical pesticides used in strawberries. If you put BT aside, and what you see for botanical, azadirachtin and Bouveria vaciana, an entomopathogenic fungus, and this is very, very little. So when we, UC produces a lot of information about IPM, but in real agriculture, IPM is more or less limited to rotation of chemicals with different modes of action. So I wanted to work more and try to improve and change the practice where growers can use other alternatives like azadirachtin and Bouveria vaciana and other fungi, even viruses and everything that is not chemical, so that they can improve the pest management practices. So I wanted to show some of these studies, and before that, what are entomopathogenic fungi? These are fungi pathogenic to arthropods, mites, insects, and you know, all those kinds of arthropods. And we have three examples: Bouveria bartiana, Metrorhizium anisocaria, which is now known as Metrorhizium brunium, and Pistromyces fumosoraceus, which is now known as Icaria fumosorosea. These are three popular fungi that you know, which are actually commercially available. They are all available for conventional agriculture, and some of them also have organic label. So those can be used. So that is one of the opportunities for using these as tools. And then they are pathogenic to almost all, or if not every, pest we have in strawberries and vegetables. So it is a good tool, but is that it? No. There are a lot of challenges too. The first challenge is high cost. They are expensive, not like $10 an acre kind of chemical spray. So they have, some of them are very expensive. And their environmental persistence is also an issue. And they can be inactivated by solar radiation and high temperatures. Fortunately, in the central coast, we have more favorable environmental conditions, but that is an issue for them. And more than that, it is generally the general perception, everybody, whether it is the scientific community or the grower community, everybody thinks biological or biopesticides are for organic agriculture, and they are not as effective and as chemical pesticides. So, you know, you have a general reluctance to depend on them. But as an IPM entomologist and as an insect pathologist, my objective is to provide good, you know, pest management solutions that has a good balance, so that we can reduce the dependence on chemical pesticides, incorporate them into pest management practices, and also increase the overall pest management efficiency. The reason is, even with all the chemical pesticides, control is not always satisfactory. So these are some of the challenges. And then another challenge here is, which is very important, compatibility with the fungicides, because farmers apply a lot of fungicides for managing diseases. And if you want to apply an entomopathogenic fungus, how are they going to be compatible, and what can you get from that interaction? So these are some opportunities, and at the same time, some very important challenges I have. Why do we need to use entomopathogenic fungi, or why shouldn't we use? If you look at this, this is a disease triangle where you have all these hosts, like Lycus bug and aphids and thrips and many more. These are all hosts that can be killed by this fungi. And then you have all these commercial materials. This is the Icaria fumosorosea. These are two different formulations, organic and conventional formulations of Bouveria bartiana, and this is MET 52 is Metrorhizium brunii. So we have them commercially available, and you have the host, the susceptible host, and the environment is also very ideal for these fungal pathogens to work. If they are effective, if they can play a role in agriculture, central coast is the location because of those mild, favorable temperatures throughout most of the year or throughout the year. And then we also have good rainfall, except for the past 2 years. We all know about the drought. But we have very good rainfall, and during the night time, the condensation on the foliage and on the plants, and then all the canopy of strawberries and some of the vegetables being close to the ground, they provide very ideal conditions for these fungal pathogens to do their job. And we also have these foggy days in the middle of the summer, or early summer. It's very foggy in some parts of our area. So all of them, again, environmentally, we have ideal conditions for these fungi to do a good job. Then what are my objectives? Objectives are to show that, or demonstrate. It is not always to show these pathogens are going to work. If they don't work, that is fine. I don't no longer have to do any work with them. So to evaluate what can they do in our area. And then if they work, try to incorporate them into IPM, and then then evaluate the interaction with the fungicides and see if there is an opportunity to improve that. And finally, what else can we use these fungal pathogens for, so that farmers more readily accept it? Can we explore if there are multiple uses, so that they are not applying only for pest management and then there is a cost effectiveness? So these are the objectives I had. And before I move on to explaining or showing my results, I just want to briefly go over the interactions that these fungal pathogens have in the environment. The first one is obviously from pathogenic interactions, killing mites or insects. And the second one is endophytic interaction, growing inside or colonizing the plant tissue. And the third one is mycorrhizal interaction, having a relationship with the root system, because these are all soil-borne pathogens, so they have evolved to have a relationship with plants and soil also. So the first one, how entomopathogenic fungi infect and kill an insect. Now you have this conidium here, germinates, produces a germ tube, then it produces this aerosorium, and through mechanical and enzymatic action, they penetrate the cuticle and get inside the insect body and multiply, invade the tissue, and eventually kill the insect, and they come out of the body and then produce more spores, which can either infect other insects or they can stay in the soil or in the plant canopy, depending on the environmental conditions there. Endophytic interaction is when you apply on the plant or in the soil these fungal pathogens, they penetrate the plant tissue and they spread throughout various tissues depending on what kind of plant it is. And then what they do is they have an impact on the herbivores feeding on through antibiosis or antigenosis. These toxins in these fungi impact herbivore feeding. And they could reduce their fecundity or longevity, and they have an impact so that they offer some kind of protection to the plant. And some studies show that they also offer protection against plant pathogenic fungi. So there is more than just pest control here that we can expect. And the next interaction is mycorrhizal interaction. A typical plant grows like this, absorbs nutrients from the soil, moisture from the soil, and then it grows. But when you have when you add these entomopathogenic fungi, they are mycorrhizal fungi, what they do is that they establish a relationship with the root system and act as extended root network. So they increase the absorption of nutrients and moisture. So there is an improved efficiency and then probably improved availability of nutrients and water for the plant, so they grow bigger. So this is the third kind of interaction we see there. Then these are the studies I have conducted. The first one is evaluate the efficacy in the field of these pathogens and see, just not in organic agriculture, try to use them in conventional agriculture. And then look at the compatibility of some of these pathogens, and I chose Bulleria bassiana as a first step to see the interaction with fungicides and how I can improve that. And then see if these fungi can colonize the strawberry or vegetable plants and improve anything that we are looking for there. And then, like I mentioned earlier, are there any novel uses for these fungi so that we can increase the acceptability among the grower community. Just want to show you a couple of important pests in strawberry. This is a western tarnished plant bug or Liger's bug. It sucks sap from the developing berries and damages the tissue. As a result of the damage, the berries after development have this deformation. They might taste perfectly all right, but it is a cosmetic damage, so it is not marketable. Except the economic threshold level is of one Liger's nymph per 20 plants. So that's very important, like you always have a lot more than that. And then we have these different species of spider mites. Two spotted spider mite is the predominant species. And we also see this strawberry spider mite from time to time, especially during warmer times of the year. And in Ventura area, we are seeing this Lewis spider mite, which is a main pest on poinsettias and raspberries and those kinds of hosts. But when strawberries are in their proximity, they're attacking strawberries too. So this is the study I started with after some preliminary studies. This is the first and largest scale field study in strawberries, where I wanted to compare this chemical standard with some of the microbial and botanical research. So SL, estimiprid, is a neonicotinoid, and then we have this botaniga, Bouveria bassiana by itself, and then Bouveria bassiana with Moltex azadirachtin. Azadirachtin is a botanical insect growth regulator. This combination is similar to this Rimon, which is an insect growth regulator, and then this is a pesticide. So similar to this, I use non-chemical alternatives. Then, using Botanica with half the label rate of chemical pesticides in an effort to reduce the pesticide use and also help the fungus to work easily on a weakened insect that is impacted by this insects. Then Botanica, the same reason for using these reducible label rates of these two. And then two rates of azadirachtin and then another chemical treatment. These were applied by the grower like this, preferably in the evenings. And then we took the counts every 5 or 6 days after treatments and applied three times at weekly intervals. And I'm going to show you the results of the summarizing for three applications. So this is what I have. This is the pre-treatment counts for Lygus nymphs, different stages of nymphs and adults, everything put together. And then this is the average for three applications. Here, looks good, right? Untreated control. You always want that to be the bigger bar. Then, if you look at the treatments, SL did a very good job. This is the kind of control you want, even better than this, because this is still above the threshold level. If you look at Botanica, Bouveria bassiana itself, it didn't do that much of a good job. When I look at the individual weekly counts, the first week the control was very good, but after that the grower pulled out all the rest of the field and only my experimental plots were remaining, so there could have been some migration from the other plots. But nevertheless, it does not show effectiveness there. But if you look at this fungus and the azadirachtin, this is similar to a popular combination, chemical combination. So look at this difference, and this is the same. So there you see a good potential from these non-chemical alternatives. And these combinations did not do too well. And I think there was an issue with the resistance with Danitol that year. And the resistance populations change from year to year, and sometimes they work well, some materials work well, and the next year they don't work well. It is a part of the frustration during the field studies. And then if you look at Azadirachtin itself, Azadirachtin by itself didn't do well at the low concentration but a higher rate. This is also very impressive. So since the focus of my talk here is to look at non-chemical alternatives and their efficacy, you can see from this first study that there is some potential for using these. And this is one of the reasons, thinking outside the cubicle, because this is the first large-scale study using these. And then based on these results, I did further studies. And I will show you, before that, I just want to show you the percent change in the populations. So here, untreated, went up, SIL provided a very good control. But if you look at this, you see a variety of differences, low or higher change in the numbers after treatment. But the point here is, they seem to be doing something good in providing control. And then this is the second year, 2013. I had the same kind of experimental setup where each treatment is about 0.3 acres, including the four applications, seven strawberry beds of 75 foot long beds, and we took the counts from the middle three beds. And here I changed the treatments a little bit. Instead of having the same material applied three times, I rotated using different modes of action. Here you see all the blues are microbial pesticides. This is the fungus, and then you have Grandivo, which is a bacterial material from Maroon Bioinnovations, and then Azodirector. Okay. So here what I was trying to do is the same thing, using the botanical fungus with the low rate. Previously I used the half the rate of the labeled rate, but here I use low labeled rate. So this is to avoid any possibility of resistance development. So these are legal low labeled rates here and here. So the idea is to see if this is if this provides good control with less of a chemical pesticide. So this is what I have. No, there are no differences, statistical differences in pre-treatment counts, but there are some differences after that. But because they are not uniform to start with, when we compare those, it never seems to make good sense. So I always want to look at the percent change compared to previous pre-treatment counts. So here too, there is an increase in untreated control, good, but you see SL. In the previous year, it provided an excellent control, up to 90%, 85% control, but here it did not do a good job. Whereas you have, you know, a good control with this chemical combination, this insect growth regulator and bifenthrin located with the fungus and Moltex, and fungus and Moltex that has directed. So this one provided a decent control, and so they two applications of the same material along with the pyrethrin combination. If you look at this Grandivo, I forgot to put a blue dot there, but this is also did not do a good job at all. It failed to provide any control. And again, coming to these two, this is this fungus with the low rates of three different chemicals that you can apply every week. This also provided a very good control. And if you look at this one closer, is a new material from Dow sulfoxaflor. It has been doing a good job on some of these pests, so it is going to be a popular, probably a popular chemical in the next few years. So my objective here is to provide an alternative so that growers can use rotate it with something else. Here, two high rates of closer and botanigard and Grandivo provided some control probably because of closer and having botanica. Again, the point here is these blues and the orange bars, the dots, show efficacy of non-chemical alternatives. This is the study I had this year. Then I expanded these treatments and changed some of those, some of these combinations and the materials. But again, I have this assay as the chemical grower standard, and this Novaluron and with rotated with other materials. Then I have this Botanigard and Moltex. In addition to that, I have this Met 52, which is a Metrizium brunium, and I also had this high and low rates of diatomaceous earth. In my opinion, this is really a good IPM strategy. Let us see if it works or not. That's we have to find out. But I have this all these kinds of materials, botanical and microbial and chemical, from different modes of action. Everything is there. So if it works well, then this could be a good way to address the pest issue. And these are the results I have from these studies. See how things change. Before the treatment, there are significant differences, and after the treatment, on the average, then there are no significant differences. This is something that used to frustrate me quite a bit. Why am I not seeing this, and how do I publish? But if you are a grower, and if you see that average it for the entire area, and even a small difference that may not be statistically different for us, could be could mean something to the grower. So these results are also very important. So here too, you can see blues, oranges, and the usual green for metrazine, which is a green fungus. And this is a Verona blonde for this Dionysius herb. I will show you the percent change, which will give you a better idea of the efficacy. Here, you can see SIO did not do anything here. So first year it did an excellent job, and the following 2 years, it hasn't done anything. So if anybody keeps using those, we are contributing to resistance problems. So it is an important thing to rotate chemicals or other materials. All of them provided some control. And again, if you look at this one, where we have botanical and microbial material, a decent control compared to chemical alone, right? And then again, this is a closer at the high rate, provided very good control. But so is the combination with the non-chemical alternatives. So this slide also shows the effectiveness of all these alternatives. And then I want to quickly show the results from my mite site study. This is a small plot study where I have some chemicals. And then this fungus at a low rate, this is what I want you to see, and a low rate of acromite. And then ecomite, was very important, seed oil mix, and then two chemicals, and then again two bacteria based materials. And Nealta is a new material from BASF, has been doing a very good job. Then these are the results I have. My technician messed up the pre-treatment counts, so I do not have them, and I took the counts from that point onwards, so I could not trust him. So I had to take the counts. It was hours and hours of counting mites and having nightmares for a few days with all the mites. And then if you look at this, I want to show this percent change. If what you can see is botanical and acromite. Again, I did not see any significant differences among these treatments, but compared to untreated control, these are the changes in populations. If you look at all these chemicals, Botanic Garden by itself, and Botanic Garden acromite and ecomite actually did a very good job. So, Randy were not bad at mites, and the Venerate actually did pretty good. So, this one also shows that we have a good potential for using these non-chemical alternatives, and if you rotate them and combine them with chemicals, they can provide a good control. Then, sorry for going fast because I only have a few minutes and lot of outside the chemical work. Right? So then I had to do some lab assays to show or to evaluate what kind of interactions this Bulgaria Bassiana has with fungicides. So this is what I did, sprayed Bulgaria Bassiana and different fungicides and different treatments together, exposed them, these mealworms, and then transferred them after one day into these vials and looked at the mortality, and then surface sterilized and put them on selective medium to see the fungal emergence. And this is what I have in terms of mortality and infection. There were significant differences among different fungicides, and some are very bad, and some are not bad. So it looks like these Elevate and Quintec are compatible with Bulgaria Bassiana, so that provides an option for these growers if they have to apply these fungicides for plant pathogen control. These are some of the choices. But I actually wanted to improve the compatibility by spacing these applications out from 0 to 6 day interval, and that can probably give them an option to use the fungus and fungicides. I did not have enough resources, so I had to let my children work on this project. And my son and my daughter worked on this, and my daughter used those data to go for science fair. She made it to the state science fair this year, and she got an award from CAPCA, $1,000 award for her work. And but she lost it to someone who did molecular work. She did this work with three fungicides, Merivon, Christine, and Switch, and got some good results. And then I recruited some more children, both my children and my friends' children. They spent 45 days this summer working with 8 fungicides and repeated 3 times. So we have good results from that, and they're all excited to be a part of the publication. It is very important. On a farm advisor salary, I cannot pay for my children's college. So if I get them onto this publication, maybe they can go to better schools, and they don't have to be a farm advisor. And then I wanted to look at this endophytic colonization. 6 or 7 years ago, there was a lot of research saying that these entomopathogenic fungi endophytically colonize some plants and also cause infection in insects feeding on them. They could cause antibiosis, I mean, affect them through antibiosis and antizoonosis, but I never understood how can fungus inside the plant produce spores that cause infection. So I questioned those studies, so I wanted to see what does it really do. So I did this study in strawberries using 2 this is a commercial isolate, this is the California isolate that I had from 10 years ago, and same thing with this fungus, 2 isolates. Applied HD, 3 concentrations, applied this corneal suspension to the soil, to the potted plants, and then took the sampling with 1, 3, 6, and 9 weeks after inoculation. So what I had to do is to surface sterilize these plant material, cut them into small pieces, and then put them on selective medium. This is a medium for metarhizin and SOP, and that purple one is for Bulgaria basia. So look for the fungus growing from inside the tissue because you surface sterilize for the bleach 3 times, each time 2 minutes. So it ought to kill the fungus on the surface. So this is what I have. This is again the first time showing that Bulgaria basia are colonizing all the tissues. So roots and petioles, pedicels, leaves and calyx and sepals of strawberries. And these are the no fungus coming from untreated controls. But I could not see any fungus growing from metarhizium treated material. So I thought metarhizium does not colonize. This is these are the results. There are significant differences, but I'm not showing them here. The point here is they colonized all of them, and they persisted for both isolates persisted for 9 weeks after treatment. So it colonizes all the material, plant tissues, persist for 9 weeks after treatment. So there is a potential if they can impact the herbivores feeding on them. But metarhizium brunium, maybe the technique I used did not work, because once they colonized the plant, their behavior, the morphology kind of changed. They became very hard, different from a culture that is grown on artificial medium or grown inside an insect. But at the time, I had some plants treated with metarhizium brunium, and I had mite infestation. And this is what I saw there. I thought the metarhizium did not colonize, but at the same time, the plants that are colonized, that were treated, the soil, not the plants, the soil treated with these metarhizium brunium withstood this mite infestation better than these untreated controls. So that means there is some kind of positive impact, either the toxin in the fungus is impacting the mites, or it is helping the plant to withstand by nutrient. There isn't much nutrition, but absorb the moisture and extend the mite damage better. Then I moved on to doing another study to see the impact of Bulgaria basiana applied to soil, foliar application on soil, and foliar application to strawberry plants, and impact on green peach aphids. This was a greenhouse study again. So this is what I saw. These are the live aphids on untreated control. Soil only, not there isn't any significant difference, but you see slight decrease in the number of live aphids. And then foliar, because they kill them through direct contact, so there are fewer aphids there. Soil and foliar, why do you have more when you're supposed to increase the synergistic effect. That is probably because this fungus is actually promoting the plant growth. We had bigger foliage in this and these treatments, so you know, bigger foliage, more apex. That is what I saw there. And this is moth healthy. This is natural moth healthy. This is from soil application. Here you can see the difference, you know, like not completely statistical, but at least if you see these two, more from soil and foliage. So that increases the number of aphids that can be killed from colonized fungus. So conclusion, both Bubaria bassiana and Metrorhizum fronium have an impact on herbivores feeding on strawberry plants. And this is also the first study to show that kind of an impact in strawberries. Then finally, moving on to mycorrhizal interactions. How do we use this? What can we do with this mycorrhizal interaction? Probably promote plant health because they provide protection against pests and pathogens, and also improve the plant growth because of improved absorption of nutrients and moisture. So based on the previous studies and my observations, and I moved on to do another study. And this study was conducted, I don't abuse people, children and all those people, but this was an opportunity where this Los Angeles County prison, they contacted me, they wanted to see if I could develop a program for them. I said definitely, because we need people who have time to thoroughly observe these experiments, and inmates could be an excellent source because you know, they could help and they can learn something from it, and it is a positive thing. So I did this study. Inmates don't know which material was given to them. They just know that these are different treatments. So someone there administered these treatments, helped them, and they were taking counts. Basically, they were looking at the health of the plant and taking the ratings of this microbial growth enhancer meant to promote the growth of the plants and help health and growth, and then Bubaria bassiana. These were transplants treated with these materials and then planted in those beds. And this is how they rated them from dead to a good 0 to 5 rating. And this is what I saw with untreated control, that's fine. And then this is with HYTA. This one is supposed to have some bacterial material. It is a proprietary information, so I don't know what is there. But surprisingly, Bubaria bassiana treated plants outperform even a commercial product meant to enhance the growth. So, except for a couple of some of those days, and most of the time, those differences were statistically significant. Then I moved on to doing a field study where we applied at the base of the plant for 6 weeks, 7 weeks every week, and then 6 times bi-weekly applications, and then we took the size of the canopy. And then eventually we took the yield counts for a few weeks and months. So this is what I saw for the canopy size. These are not statistically significant, but you can see the way I treated one was slightly, plants are slightly bigger for the first few months, but it changed afterwards. And this is the total yield, not statistically significant for the total strawberry yield, but you know, you can see that Bubaria bassiana lag behind, especially if you look at the marketable yield. You might not see a big difference, but here, but you know, 1 ton difference per acre is quite a bit. So there is an impact, but you know, it needs some fine tuning so that we can use these materials for these you know, other than pest control purposes. And then finally, I have one more study. This is, so I used multiple insect pathogens, pathogenic fungi, and compared them with microbial enhancers to see the impact on cabbage plant growth and development. And this experiment was conducted in dark with artificial lights and limited water application using Miracle-Gro soil potting medium as the untreated, and then all these materials added on top of it. And again, this was done by my children, and we presented, I presented this in Germany a few months ago, and Ed Lewis was also there. So these are the results from the study. And these are the treatments I had. Untreated control, Bulgaria bassiana, Metrorhizium, and then Neisseria. These are three insect pathogenic fungi. And then this is a small grow, has a variety of bacteria and fungi. And this one has, I don't know what it has. It is just some minerals and other materials, no microbial materials there. But this one has, again, a mycorrhizal fungus. And this is a liquid compost, H2H, that is supposed to have some microbes also, but I used it to see the impact on the plant growth. This is how they were applied periodically, and you can see the difference here. After 40 days, this is with the Bulgaria bassiana. All the plants survived, and they all look clearly big and better. And these are the results in, for survival. All of them are alive for up to 90 days, which is very, very long. And the plants are, again, grown under stressful conditions, so you do not see that in your development, but it is good for this kind of experiment. And then this is the plant health rating 0 to 5. Always, these plants treated with the variables always perform very well. Compared to some of these other materials. And then if you look at the shoot length and the root length, and you want a bigger shoot development from a smaller root mass so that you increase the efficiency where the plant has to produce more green material. And this is the shoot to root ratio. Again, this did really well, botanical. And although all of them did not survive from metrorhizium-treated plants and the health rating was low compared to some other treatments, this one also produced a good shoot-to-root ratio. And then this is finally the dry weight. I did not have any multiple replications. It is just 10 plants I had, and some of them died. So in some treatments, I had only 2 plants. So this is the weight of the average weight of those plants for the dry biomass. And here too, Botanica produced bigger biomass. So based on that, if I, the first 3 points is summarize what I have shown, but these are the important things. So we see a bigger potential than pest control from these fungal pathogens. And it can probably improve the cost effectiveness rather than applying different materials for different purposes. Growers can use just this one. They can get a better plant growth and a better plant health and also pest management. It is good and it increases the acceptability, and thus it reduces the use of chemical pesticides and increases sustainable sustainable agriculture. And the last slide, just to show other things, these are not scientific publications other than the scientific publications. These are all that we have to do to increase the, maximize the outreach. So these are different tools. You have a smartphone application to these newsletter or blog articles that have very big readership. And this is all I do in my job. I would like to thank all the growers and industry partners and all the technicians and all the two prison inmates who worked on this, and that was the first of a kind of a research. So I thank them for being a part of that, and all the unpaid student child laborers for helping with this research. And with this, I'd like to thank you. This is the conclusion of my talk. Thank you very much. Very good question. Fumigation is done a few weeks or months. It is completed before the plant. So by the time the plant, soil is kind of repopulated with some of these whether they are plant pathogenic or beneficial, it is repopulated. So because we are going to start applying at the time of planting, it is actually a good strategy. You fumigate, clean it up, and then start to beneficial.
So there's no residual or hangover effect that would
of the fumigation?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No. Very good and important question. Previously, we did not have any results to show, okay, these are the options that they could use. But when they started seeing, some growers started to use some of them, but some of them are expensive, so not everybody is jumping onto those. But it is always providing the options. It is ultimately their decision which product they want to use. But these results show them, okay, these are the options you have. And microbial and botanical materials can also be an important part of IPM. And some have used, some are starting to use, and I have a lot more inquiries from growers from different regions than before. So slowly but steadily making some progress.
We're going to end it here because we just want, we have a class coming in. We do have a pizza lunch upstairs, so if there are students that want to interact with Dr. Dara, please stop by, grab a piece of pizza and chat with him. He is also looking for students maybe to take place of some of those prison inmates. But in all seriousness, if you're interested in working with Dr. Dara and getting really practical experience in a major crop in California, you know, maybe it's a tough situation, but again, if you want that practical experience, he is the man. So thank you for the time.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.